On this week's episode, I lose my mind because I saw a bug, then I lose my mind about the Star Trek Mission Crate, the Venture Brothers, and pro wrestling. All that and who knows what else. I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Empty Checking. I'm going to cut right to it. I'm a little distracted here tonight and a little bit unnerved. I was in my bathroom, that's not why I'm unnerved. I was in my bathroom and doing what you do in a bathroom and felt a strange but familiar sensation on my right arm. And I looked down and there was a little black dot there. That was clearly a bug, and I took a swipe at it and hit it with my hand, and when I took my hand away, the bug jumped off my arm, and I was like, oh no, that's not good, and later it landed on my arm again, and I swiped and hit it and smacked it really hard again, and took my hand away, and the bug jumped off my arm again, and that's a flea. That's what fleas do and look like, and, I've got some experience with fleas. This is the first one I've seen in the house in over a decade, maybe longer, in fact, probably closer to two decades. But there was an infestation here at one point, a good 20 years ago when I was a teenager. I don't know where they're coming from now or where the one I've seen came from. I'm hoping it's just the one and it'll die somewhere in my bathroom and I'll never hear of it again. But I don't know where it would have come from because I don't have any pets. I don't spend any time outside, really. So I don't know. I mean, it probably jumped off a tree or something onto me while I was walking from the car to the house or something. In the 90s, we had a dog. Her name was Amber. May she rest in peace. This isn't why she died. And she brought some fleas in the house, and they, I'm sure, were bothering her too. But they seemed to really take a liking to me, and I got all bit up around my ankles and elsewhere, but mainly the ankles because fleas are attracted to elastic. That's a fun fact to learn. And your socks have elastic in them. So I got my ankles all bitten up and stuff, and I had something like 60 bites on one foot and was telling my dad, hey, we've got fleas, because I'm all bitten up and we've got fleas. And my dad didn't think it was that big of a deal. He didn't really believe me. He has since apologized for this copiously. Dad, I promise I'm not just giving you trouble here. This is just how the story goes, and it's applicable to my current situation. Dad just kind of thought, it's, you know, I haven't seen any fleas. It's not that big a deal. You're probably nuts, you know? and so lived for several weeks with fleas. And eventually, Dad saw them too. I guess they worked their way out from my room and where the dog was, and like big ones started showing up because fleas start out really small. Like that's most of the fleas that you'll encounter if you ever have them are small little black dots, black and brown dots, and you might not even notice them if they weren't biting you. In fact, I can see on my arm where it bit me right now, but you might not notice them unless you're getting bitten. And I was getting bitten regularly, and I was killing fleas regularly. They are very tough. They're hard to kill. The only ways that I've found over the years of killing them are either, one, they eventually die if they get sprayed with ethyl alcohol, or two, the sort of weird way that I ended up doing it was I'd take a piece of tape, and when I'd see it land on my arm, I'd kind of catch it under the tape, like, instead of just hitting it, I'd catch it on the tape, and I'd peel it off and keep it on the tape and put it on a hard surface, and then, like, squish it with a screwdriver or something. That's the only way I could ever find to kill fleas effectively. I would have loved to have strangled them to death with my hands in front of their families while their children are screaming, "No, Daddy, no." I would have preferred that, but that wasn't an option. I had to trap them under tape and then flatten them with a screwdriver. Or penny, something like that. Sometimes when I was feeling particularly vindictive, I'd just leave them under the tape to die a long, slow, painful death. That felt good. So I've seen a flea. By the way, the way that eventually got solved in the 90s was Dad started seeing them too, but also the dog got really, really anemic and almost died. She just kind of stopped moving and was effectively bleeding to death, and had to take her into the vet, and the vet had to do a bunch of stuff and fix her up because fleas were just destroying her. They would have gotten there with me, too, eventually, I think, because I was just regularly, like, every morning I'd wake up with more bites, and every day I'd see them on my skin and have to deal with that, and that was just miserable. I hate fleas more than anything in the world, more than, given the option between having fleas or having absolutely any other option, I will take that other option. Like, I'd rather have a spider on my face. That's how much I hate fleas. Because, yes, spiders terrify me, but eventually it's down to them and me, and I'm going to win. But if the choices are you have fleas or you have 1,000 tiny Hitlers, give me the Hitlers. I will take the Hitlers over the fleas. I would prefer the Hitlers to the fleas, because at least the Hitlers, you know that eventually they're going to kill themselves. The fleas will last forever. It took multiple bug bombings. It took multiple, like, stuff got thrown away. It was awful. I'm really hoping that I only have the one flea. It goes away quickly, and we never have to mention this again, but, like, this just happened, and I sat down to record my show. So that's why you're getting an earful about fleas and lessons about fleas. If you're the kind of animal rights activist that thinks that, you shouldn't kill them even though they're bugs and even though they're irritating, f*** you. I'm gonna kill the fleas. I don't care about the fleas. The fleas can die. They're not human. They're not protected. They don't have souls. They're soulless little bloodsuckers, and they deserve death. You're wrong. Go back to Whole Foods and eat your paleo granola nonsense. I'm gonna kill myself some fleas. Although granola's delicious, but I sometimes shop there too. The point is, I hate fleas. I've seen one. It's not dead, to my knowledge. It's still hopping around the bathroom floor somewhere. I'm furious. I'm frustrated. I'm frightened. And I just want this to be over quicker than it started. So that's the mindset that we're in as we're recording the show today. I am sorry that that's going to be the prevailing thought on my mind. I'm sorry if I keep referencing it throughout the show. Here's hoping I can get through it. I'd really like to talk about wrestling instead, because we just had SummerSlam. I'd really like to talk about some of the guitar stuff that I've had come in. I'm going to try to do all of that, but just know that in the back of my mind, all that's happening is flea, flea. I saw a flea. There's a flea. There's a flea in the bathroom. There's a flea. A flea was on me. A flea has bitten my arm. There's a flea. And I've been forever traumatized by fleas, and this is all I can think about. It's going to be all I can think about until I've seen a flea carcass under a piece of tape that I've squashed flat with a screwdriver. Then I'll be happy, and I'll be able to sleep tonight. Until then, all I can think about is, oh God, there's a flea. So that's the tone of the show. I apologize for that. We're going to try and do this anyway. We're going to try and power through and soldier through. This is the worst day of my life, but we're going to try and get through it together. So stay tuned. We're going to play a little bit of music, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about stuff. Fleas. I guess one of the things that I should talk about, and boy wouldn't it be appropriate if this is where the fleas came from, is, surprise of surprise, the mission crate from the Loot Crate people delivered. For those of you who may be new to the show, the mission crate is a Star Trek-themed loot crate situation. You get one every now and again when they remember to send it to you that, just has random Star Trek stuff in it. You don't know what you're getting. You're just getting something. And I signed up for that. It's $40 a crate. It's supposed to be a every other month thing. There's supposed to be 6 of them. I've been doing the pay-as-you-go thing, and the first one was delayed. The second one was delayed. The third one that should be to us by now has been delayed. But I just got the second one, which means that it was pushed back by 5 months from the date that we were supposed to get it. But we finally got the second one. It's been a long struggle, and it's been a very frustrating one, and I've since canceled my crate subscription, but I've paid for 3, so eventually I'll get 3 whenever they remember to send the third one. It's been a very disappointing experience. I said when I reviewed the first mission crate that as much as I was frustrated by the fact that it was a couple 3 months late, something like that, everything in it was really cool and it was worth the money, but it just wasn't worth the time and the frustration. And I've got to say, with mission crate number 2, this one isn't even worth the money. I was very disappointed with this one. It's called, the theme of it is Way of the Warrior, which means it's all basically Klingon-themed, which I don't really care about the Klingons that much. I mean, they're fine. I like Lieutenant Worf. Everybody likes Worf. But I don't really care about the Klingons the way that some people do. So I was prepared to be a little bit kind of blah about this one just because of my lack of interest. But even with that in mind, there's a lot to be disappointed about in this crate. It came 5 months late, let's just say that again. It did not have a t-shirt in it. I was hoping to get a t-shirt. I think they at one point even promised a t-shirt per crate, but I'm not 100% on that, so don't quote me on it. That I may be entirely wrong on that, but I was expecting a t-shirt. I think everybody was expecting a t-shirt. And just the stuff that we got is kind of crappy. The one thing in there that I can see myself, in fact, the one thing in there that I am using and displaying, because it's on a shelf of mine now, is there's a figurine of Lieutenant Worf holding a batleth above his head about to strike something. It's just kind of a statuette. It's not anything that you can play with, really, or whatever, but it's kind of cool. I'm all right with that. That's probably about a $20 value. That's fine by me. The rest of it, I could do without. There's a pair of socks. There's socks with the Klingon insignia on them. There's a Klingon emblem badge, which actually would be kind of cool if I was into Klingons. I should give them more credit for that. That's probably about $7. There's a Klingon sticker, which is exactly the same as the badge. I guess if you collect stickers, that's all right. There's a Star Trek Discovery lapel pin, which is exactly the same as the badge that we got in the previous crate, but smaller. So that is kind of pointless. But the stupidest thing in the entire crate is they gave us a tribble, which if it were a normal tribble, I would have been thrilled by that. I would have been happy with that, because I've actually always kind of wanted to put a tribble on one of my shelves. I've always wanted to bump into an officially licensed tribble and display it somewhere. But they gave us what's known as a Mirror Universe Tribble, which I don't think has appeared in any shows. I think that's strictly a comic book thing, or maybe an online game thing. What it is it's a darkly colored Tribble with teeth. You heard me. Go to the blog and take a look at this stupid thing. It's one of the dumbest things that I've ever been given for free. And that's saying a lot, because I've been given a lot of stuff for free, and this is one of the dumbest things I've ever been given for free. I was going to maybe just pull the teeth off of the thing and display it as a normal tribble, but I actually can't find a way to do that without just tearing it apart. So I think I might tear it apart, because I think it's supposed to be mildly scary looking. It just looks dumb. It's just stupid. It's like somebody affixed some of those fake vampire fangs that kids wear at Halloween to a tribble and then colored it red and black. It's actually kind of cool colors, but it's just so incredibly stupid. And this is one of the big selling points of this crate, I think. I think this is what's supposed to be one of the things that we're the happiest about. This is a terrible, terrible crate. This was not worth my $40. It's not worth the 5 months of waiting. It's not worth continuing the subscription. I'm actually dreading the next one. I'm actually dreading the next crate that is going to inevitably show up on my doorstep, probably 6 years from now, whenever Loot Crate gets their shit together and actually sends it. This has just been such a disappointing experience. Like, even if I was into the Klingons, I think I would have been let down with this, because who cares about socks? I'm almost 40 years old. I have a day job. I'm gonna walk around flashing my socks to people at my office? Again, the badge, kind of cool if I was into Klingons. It's decently made and stuff. The lapel pin is just a repeat, but a smaller one. The statuette thing, okay, fine, I'll put that up. That's kind of all right. I like Worf fine. The tribble is just mind-numbingly stupid. Like, it's not even from the show. It's not even in the show. Unless it's in Discovery, which I haven't seen. I don't know of anywhere that the Mirror Universe Tribble has shown up. The Mirror Universe, incidentally, if you don't know what that is, it's a universe where everything's kind of backwards. We first saw it in the Mirror Mirror episode of the first series, the original series. It's the one where, like, Spock had a beard and stuff like that, and, like, everybody was kind of evil. And they've revisited that theory a couple of times. They did that particularly on Deep Space Nine, and I think Voyager. Please don't jump all over me if I'm wrong about that. But they've visited that theory, that concept a few times. And there's a number of comic books dealing with that concept, but the comic books are only debatably canon. For those of us who just watched the show, the comic books are meaningless. And I'm not even sure that this was in that. I think it's just a bad idea someone had, and they stuck it on shelves thinking that people would buy it because it says Star Trek, and they were probably right. It's just so stupid. It's just so stupid. And I don't know what they were thinking in making it. I don't know why I have one, but I'm not going to have it for very long. This thing's getting thrown out. Just an incredibly disappointing experience all around. I choose to believe that it's Loot Crate that's putting us through this rather than the Star Trek people. I would like to think that the Star Trek people care about their fans a little bit more than that, or at least care about their legacy. And if I were them, I would be embarrassed to have my name on this product. Not just the Tribble, on this crate. I would be embarrassed by that. I'm not looking forward to the third one. I don't even remember what the third one's called anymore, if it's even got a title. I think it may be so far behind it doesn't even have a title. I'm not looking forward to it. I don't want it, but I've already paid for it. They were bang on time taking our money every 2 months, but they couldn't be bothered to deliver the crates on time. And so now I've got a third one that's inevitably going to come to my house sometime after the next president is elected. And I'm stuck with it. I'm stuck with whatever garbage is in it, because I think they went out of their way because they knew how pissed off people were to deliver pretty well on the first one, even though it was late. But this, it feels like the second one. I mean, there's something to be said for a sophomore slump, but I have a feeling this is going to be what par for the course is, and frankly, I'll move to another green. Still love Star Trek, still support Star Trek, still waiting to get Discovery on Blu-ray, which I think it's out now, and I haven't gotten it yet. Looking forward to that, looking forward to the new series that's going to have Jean-Luc Picard in it again. I don't know when that's going to happen or what it's going to be called, but I'm looking forward to it. That should be a lot of fun. I'm in no way upset at Star Trek. I'm incredibly disappointed with Loot Crate, and I'm never going to be spending money on them again. So there you are. There's my review. It's crap. Let's move on to something else.
Said worm, don't think I wish you harm, but I'm really not sure. You've got a lot of things you should account for, but you could probably say the same to me. Thank you for asking. asking.
Let's talk about something a little bit happier. Let's talk about something that I've been enjoying. Let's talk about television. I'm going to spend an extended period of time talking about wrestling, but there is one other thing I want to talk about first, and that is the current season of The Venture Brothers. If you are like my brother and don't want to be spoiled on The Venture Brothers, which you're not going to be able to see for a little while because you don't get Adult Swim on cable, go ahead and skip ahead to the next thing. I'll put a time index on the blog that tells you where the wrestling talk starts if you want to hear that, or otherwise, I do that every week. But I really want to talk about The Venture Brothers, and this is your last warning. I'm going to be putting some spoilers in here because I'm really, really excited and I really, really want to talk about it. The Venture Brothers, for those who are unfamiliar with it, started out as a sort of light Johnny Quest parody, sort of a dirty Johnny Quest, and very quickly morphed into something that has an incredibly deep, dense backstory that is entirely its own thing and is one of my favorite things in the whole freaking world. They tell jokes on that show that are so specific and so densely referenced and so specifically referenced that every now and again I watch it and just think, wow, did I write this? Because what other show in the world is going to have a major character named David Bowie who's pretending and claiming to be David Bowie, and his henchmen are Iggy Pop and Klaus Nomi? What other show can you think of that's gonna do that? That was several seasons back. That barely counts as a spoiler anymore. What other show is going to have an entire sort of stable of villains based on Andy Warhol's factory? What other show is going to have a character that they've never actually named on screen, but that you know, because they've told you on commentary, is half Unicorn and half Cornelius from Planet of the Apes, so his name is Unicornelius? What other show is gonna do that kind of nonsense? There isn't one. I defy you to find me one, and if you do, I will watch it, because that is definitely my cup of tea. But The Venture Brothers does that, but it also weaves in a very, like I said, a very dense and very rewarding plot for someone who's a longtime fan or people who do multiple watches of the show. There's a lot to sink your teeth into. If you liked Lost, think of Lost, but ramp that up by about 100, because they actually deliver on their promises, unlike just handing you mysteries and just being like, it's weird, I guess. The Venture Brothers actually answer their own problems that they put out there, and it's such a bizarre show and such a fun show. We're in season 7 right now, and we dealt with, if you don't know the show, a lot of this isn't going to make sense from here out. We dealt with the Monarch and Dr. Venture and Dr. Jonas Venture, and just a whole bunch of crazy crap. The Monarch has been, of course, masquerading as the Blue Morpho, someone who used to run around with the departed Jonas Venture back in the 60s, I guess? 70s, whatever. And he's been masquerading as him and taking out supervillains. And there's been, these first three episodes of this series have been dealing with that sort of premise, with the Monarch as the Blue Morpho. They, in fact, have called these three episodes the Morphic Trilogy. They're just dealing with the Morpho. And we've just kind of dealt with the mystery surrounding him and some questions surrounding him. And we've dealt with this last episode was just bananas, and there's so much in it that if you haven't watched the show, it's hard to even know where to start. But we saw the return of the cyborg Vendetta, who is in the guise of the Blue Morpho, while the Monarch is watching on, also dressed in the clothes of the Blue Morpho, wondering who the hell's this guy. And Vendetta comes in, and we've discovered by now that the problem device that was going off, the computer that was going off in the first episode that was causing all the problems in the first episode, the problem device is powered by the head of the late Jonas Venture, Rusty Venture's dad. He's in there. His head is in there, and it's alive because that's what that machine does. It's keeping him alive. So we actually saw Dr. Venture, we actually saw Rusty Venture reunited with his dad briefly, which was so weird. But then Vendetta shows up as Blue Morpho, and we find out through a series of interfaces that he actually is the original Blue Morpho. Now, the original Blue Morpho was actually the father of the Monarch, Dr. Venture's arch enemy. So we've got Dr. Venture's father there with his head in a machine. We've got the Monarch's father there interfacing with the head in the machine. And we've got Dr. Venture, we've got Rusty Venture a little bit dealing with seeing his dad for the first time in years. And we've also got the Monarch comes in full Monarch regalia because he's trying to avoid being confused for the Blue Morpho. It's all very complicated. We've got the Monarch coming in, and he's seeing his dad for the first time since he was a child. And it was all very intense and moving and gripping, and for someone who's been watching the show since season one, like myself, it was very fulfilling because you just saw all this stuff unfold in a way that you never would have imagined it could, and it was just brilliant and beautiful, and it was so well done. And of course, at the end of the episode, both Dr. Venture and the Morpho are dead again. Although we did get the Monarch's real name. Until now, we've never had the Monarch's real name. His real name was revealed both in dialogue and in a printout on a screen to be Malcolm Fitzcarraldo, which that's got to be an anagram for something, but I don't know what. But Malcolm Fitzcarraldo, that's the Monarch's real name. We know that now, seven seasons in, over a decade into watching the show. We finally have the Monarch's real name. It was just an incredibly fulfilling episode. Exciting. It kept me glued to it. The whole season so far has kept me glued to it. I'm so excited to be in the Shirt of the Month Club, or Shirt of the Week Club, whatever it is, where they air a show and then send you a t-shirt related to that show. Signed up for that, and I'm waiting for that. I'm looking forward to getting my first shirt whenever it arrives. I have no idea when that's going to be, but I am going to wear the hell out of that shirt. Such a good show, and this season's been so rewarding and so energizing. I'm looking forward to it every week. I was super pissed off at my DVR one week when it didn't record it, and I had to set it to record the 2 a.m. replay, and just, like, I almost stayed up until 2 a.m. just to make sure it recorded, because I would have just been miserable and furious, but, it recorded okay, and it's just been great. It's just been such a great season. It's been beautifully done. They know their fan base so well, and they know how to reward their fan base. Talking about the weird stuff they put in there, they had a background character in this past episode that was Mr. Fahrenheit, the supersonic man, and he just was absolutely Freddie Mercury, yellow jacket and all, and mustache in the Freddie Mercury way. They had a guy there that was a werewolf character and looked kind of familiar. And you figure out why he's familiar when you get his name, which is Scary Nelson, which is a reference to Harry Nelson, the singer from the 60s. And that joke was for me. Like, I'm the person in their audience that got that joke. Except also Harry Nelson's kid got it, because Harry Nelson's kid tweeted about it, which was kind of amazing, because one of the show creators, Jackson Public, a.k.a. Christopher McCulloch, retweeted it, and it was Harry Nelson's son just saying, "I never thought I would see my dad on an episode of The Venture Brothers, much less an episode that was so dealing with fathers and sons." So it was just a wild trip to be on Twitter that night too, and it's just been such a good show, and so rewarding and so fun. And if you're not a fan of the show, get the DVDs, find it on whatever streaming service it's on, watch it. I think maybe it's on Hulu. It might be on Hulu, Amazon Prime, I'm not sure. I don't think it's on Netflix, but I believe it is on Hulu. Watch the show. Just start in season one. You're going to need to know all of it. They reference themselves all the time. You're going to want to start in season one. You're going to want to watch it through. And believe me, you'll be rewarded for that. You'll feel great about it. It's so funny. And in places, really foul. I'll prepare you for that. It's very off color in places. But right beyond that, it's that thing that George Carlin did, where you can be offensive in one breath and incredibly intelligent in the next breath, while still being a little offensive. So they're masters of that as well. And Venture Brothers is a great show. Season 7 is one of my favorite things on TV right now. I can't say enough about it. I can't rant hard enough about it. It's taking my mind off the fleas right now. or flea, singular, so far. It's taking my mind off that right now, so that's how good the show is. It's robbed me of my one enemy. So you're going to want to check this thing out, especially if you've ever been a fan in the past. This seems to be a season that's going to be very rewarding for all of us. So that's where we are. We got another episode coming up this next week. Looking forward to watching it too. Maybe I'll report on it next week. Maybe I'll report on it in 2 weeks and give myself a little bit of breathing room. Who knows? It's hard to say. I barely even outlined this show. But Venture Brothers is great. Watch it. The end. Let's talk about wrestling. Welcome back, anybody who skipped over the Venture Brothers part because they didn't want spoilers and is now listening to wrestling. We're going to talk about wrestling. Been a big week in the WWE. Big, exciting week. We had the SummerSlam pay-per-view, which is one of the big four. You got your WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, and Survivor Series. SummerSlam's one of the big four. In fact, I kind of consider it one of the big two. It's I think the second in line right after WrestleMania as being in order of importance. A lot happened. Going into SummerSlam, there were decent shows leading up to it, but I wasn't expecting a spellbinding pay-per-view, but boy did we get one. It was such a good show. We had huge things happen. Seth Rollins beat Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental belt in an excellent match. They really put on a good show. This is the match they should have had at Extreme Rules, but they got outshined by a countdown clock. So it was good to see them put on the match that we know they're capable of and give the fans the show that the fans deserve and have the fans treat it respectfully this time. It was a really good match, and I like seeing Seth with gold. So that's good news. If there's a better worker in the company than Seth Rollins, I'd love to know who it is. It might be AJ. AJ Styles might be better than Seth, but Seth is unarguably one of the best on the roster, and he's a lot of fun to watch. And Dolph is much better than he gets credit for. I'm not a fan, but he's much better than he gets credit for. And that pairing has put on some really entertaining matches. We had some stuff at the pay-per-view that didn't make sense. One of those things is that Braun Strowman destroyed Kevin Owens, who I think got in one offensive maneuver. I get why they need Braun to look like a monster, but I don't know why they need Kevin Owens to be that squashable. Owens is a very good fighter, and he has been an intimidating heel in the past, and he needs to be again, because that's how he works. So I'm hoping that they right the ship on Owens very soon, because that didn't make a lot of sense to me. It was too quick, and it helped the overall time of the show. The show was off virtually right at the stroke of 10 o'clock Central, which was impressive, because they usually go quite long, especially on the big four shows. But they kept the time down, but at the expense of what I thought was going to maybe be a decent match. So that didn't make a lot of sense, but what did make sense was the women's title match. We saw Charlotte Flair become the new women's champion, defeating Carmella and Becky Lynch. Carmella doesn't do much for me. She's actually a decent heel. She's pretty good on the mic. I don't have anything particularly against her, but I don't have strong feelings about her one way or the other. She's a good heel, and I kind of like having a belt on a heel. It gives it a little bit more. You want to see the face win, you know, so that's fine. But they've got the belt on Charlotte. I will never question them putting a belt on a Flair, so I'm fine with that. At the end of the match, Charlotte and Becky squared off. Becky finally snapped and attacked her best friend and left her laying. And that was good. That was well done. It was a pretty good match overall, in fact. And Becky at the end just kind of laying out Charlotte kind of was the icing on the cake, and it was a very welcome thing. It's nice to see them do something with Becky's character other than just happy Irishman, or Irish woman, I guess. It's nice to see a little bit of development for Becky's character, and also it just feels like they need a few more good heels in the women's division, because the ones that they have in the women's division are kind of cartoony in some ways. I mean, you got your Riot Squad, You got your Alexa Bliss. She's good. She's very good. We'll talk about her in a minute. But it just seems like there's a lack of good heels in the women's division. I think part of that's just the nature of they're trying to build the whole women's evolution thing, and they're leading toward that pay-per-view, and they want to. I think they just want all of their women to be cheered so badly that they've done a bad job developing heels really to the benefit of the division in some ways, because if you're willing to cheer someone, then you're going to buy into their match, and it's been, I get it, but it's nice to see a couple of good strong heels that Carmella's a decent heel, but she's again a little bit cartoony, like, you know, she looks into winning a little bit too much, I think, which is a very heel thing to do. So it's hard to criticize it. She's not bad, but Becky has the opportunity to be a really true. I'm going to use the word dastardly heel, and I'm looking forward to that if they pull the trigger on it right. What they're doing with Charlotte and Becky, incidentally, right now, is exactly what they should have done with Sasha and Bayley. But now they've waited too long on Sasha and Bayley, and I don't care anymore. So here's hoping that they get Charlotte and Becky right, because they could put on some really great matches with each other for years to come, and I'm looking forward to watching those. In what was hands down the match of the night, in fact, as soon as it was over, I turned to my dad, who I was watching the pay-per-view with, and said, well, there was the main event. We saw AJ Styles taking on Samoa Joe for the World Championship. And this was just a brutal, incredible match. AJ Styles got busted open, I think, hard way. I think that was legit. I don't think he bladed. It looked like he probably caught the edge of the steps or something when he fell out of the ring last. I that looked legit. Joe involved Styles' family in a way that was uncomfortable but didn't quite cross the line. I'm always a little bit reluctant to see a wrestling angle involve someone's real life family, especially their kids. One of AJ's kids, little girl, toddler age, a little bit above toddler, I guess, she was talking and stuff. But she was ringside with her mom, and Samoa Joe a couple of times referenced them on a microphone, just grabbed a microphone and talked about them, said that he was going to send daddy home tonight, you know, that kind of stuff. And the kid, fortunately, is just young enough that she probably didn't know what was going on. But it was like that was AJ's real wife and AJ's real kid. And that's it was just a little bit cringy in that way of like, ooh, they shouldn't cross this line, you know. But they did it in a way that didn't completely cross the line. It was just uncomfortable, but it wasn't difficult to watch. It was just uncomfortable. So that was very well done, and I think some of the credit for that probably has to go for Joe, who knows how to do that kind of thing, and probably also AJ. But that the family angle was very well done. The end of the match was spectacular. The whole match was spectacular. Those guys put on a clinic. And I cannot wait for their feud to continue. But the match ended by disqualification when AJ attacked Samoa Joe with a chair, which is something we don't see AJ Styles do. It was incredible. And it came because Samoa Joe had knocked him down, had him down on the ground, and Joe got up on the announcer's table and grabbed a mic and said to AJ's wife, I know I said I was going to be sending daddy home and that isn't going to happen, but I'll be your new daddy. And then we got a perfect shot of AJ Styles looking furious, and he just ran and just tackled the crap out of him and then beat him up with a steel chair. It was beautiful. It was the kind of thing that reminds me of why I love wrestling. And AJ, you know, beat up Joe with the chair. His wife was yelling at him to stop, and AJ eventually did stop. Jumped over the guardrail, walked up to his wife and kid. His kid, I'm sure this was a shoot, his kid looked at him and said, Daddy, you're bleeding. And he said, I know, I'm sorry. And just kind of picked up his kid, and the crowd cheered, which was very classy from the crowd. It was stunning that the crowd was that classy. And AJ just kind of left with his family. It was so well done. It was so well done. It was beautiful. It was just one of those great stories that you sometimes get out of a wrestling angle. And the disqualification, look, I would have loved to have seen a clean finish, but I would love even more to see them do this 10 more times, and a DQ on the first match allows that to happen. So I'm all for it. I am really looking forward to seeing where this goes. Match of the night, hands down. Match of the night. It absolutely could have gone on last. I'm kind of glad that it went on where it did, because it made it a show stealer rather than just, it was the main event. Of course it was good. It was just a great match. Just incredible. I can't say enough about that match or the guys in it. I've been following both of those guys for a real long time. I was following Samoa Joe before he was even in TNA. That's how long I've been invested in Joe's career. And it's so cool to see those two guys whose careers I've been invested in for just a very, very long time finally doing this on the biggest stage in the country. That's so cool. And they did it so well. And it was just great. After that, we had Daniel Bryan lose to The Miz. I didn't care much about that one. It was a good match, though. I've stated on the podcast before, I'm not a huge Daniel Bryan fan. I know, fine, crucify me, whatever. The Miz is doing some of the best work of his career right now. I'm not a huge fan of his either, though, so I wasn't super invested in this match, but I did enjoy it. It was a good match, and the brass knuckles finisher from The Miz was entertaining. So that's classic heel stuff, so I appreciate that. It was a good match, but ultimately, it was a good match that I didn't care that much about. I know everybody else in the world did. After that, we had Baron Corbin come to the ring, and then Finn Balor comes out. There's a little bit of a pause before Finn Balor comes out, and we hear the heartbeat, and Finn Balor came out as the Demon, which no one saw coming. Nobody was thinking Finn was going to do the Demon. We haven't heard about the Demon in maybe close to a year. It's been quite some time since he's done the Demon gimmick, and it was really cool to see it. I'd actually never seen that live in the moment before. Like, I've seen the Demon character, but I've never seen him. Like, I've never been part of the live audience for that, like, seeing it as it happens for that. And I can only imagine what that's like in the arena. I haven't been to that either. But it was my first time seeing it busted out as a live feature. And it was really cool, and it was really fun. And this was another squash match that was over super quick. But in this case, it made a lot of sense and set up more stuff to come. And it was just a lot of fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit. But not a lot to say about it because it was over quickly. We had Shinsuke Nakamura defeating Jeff Hardy, retaining his U.S. belt. Jeff Hardy, man, I don't like seeing him doing what he's doing anymore, because we all know that he's got a serious back problem. He hasn't been doing the Swanton Bomb at shows or whatnot lately, house shows, I should say, lately. But at this one, he did the Swanton, but did it and missed Shinsuke and landed on the ring apron, which is very hard. That's a very hard surface of the ring. It's hard to explain the physics of it, but that's, if you do that kind of move in the middle of a ring, there's a little bit of give there, there's a little bit of bounce. Over on the side of the ring, outside of the ropes, there's no bounce there, and he just landed flat on his back there, and it's just one of those things you don't want to see him do anymore, and it was the thing that kind of ended the match, more or less. Shinsuke then basically got a quick pin. I don't know. It's uncomfortable to watch him do that stuff anymore. Unless he's heading toward hanging it up, unless this is kind of, all right, last run doing the crazy stuff. You know, that I get, but it's, the guy's beaten up, and I don't want to see him in a wheelchair, you know? And I just hope he dials that back and soon. But it was a good match. Otherwise, it was just a little uncomfortable watching that happen. It was just the same way that Samoa Joe and AJ made you cringe in the good way. This made me cringe in the bad way, just to see him doing that at his age and in his condition. But like I said, maybe this is the last run for him or something, so he wants to just put on a good show on his way out. Who can tell? Good match, just a ugly swanton for the ending. We then had another squash match. It seems like almost all of the Raw matches were squash matches. That's kind of interesting. We had another squash match where Ronda Rousey, Rowdy Ronda Rousey, just destroyed Alexa Bliss, and did that thing where Rhonda bends Bliss's arm back so far that it folds back on itself. Bliss is double-jointed in her elbows and can bend her arm back the wrong way. That's something that if you know it, it's easier to watch that stuff. You don't get quite as upset by it, but it's still just disturbing to look at. I mean, the amount of trust that Alexa has to have in Rhonda to let her do that. Whew. but yeah, Rhonda just about popped Bliss's arm out of its socket, bent it back so far that she did the double-jointed thing. It was a good quick display. It was a lot of fun. They put the belt on Rousey, and it makes sense. I always prefer to have a belt on a heel. I said that earlier, and I'm going to say that here again. And I like Alexa Bliss a lot. I would love to see her keep the belt forever. But I get it. Rousey is the biggest name in the world. She needs a belt, and they gave it to her. And it's not like she's not worthy of it. She's got a lot of skill in the ring. She's very talented. She's a spectacle to watch. She's got a great presence, a great personality. She looks tough when she needs to look tough. She looks like she's having fun when she needs to have fun. She has her head on straight, which is kind of nice to see of somebody coming in from outside of the business. At the end of the match, she went up to the top of the ramp and dedicated her win to Rowdy Roddy Piper, which was very sweet. I adore Roddy Piper. He's one of my favorite wrestlers. I'm still really bummed that he's dead. And I know that she was friends with him. That's why she uses the Rowdy moniker. She wears a jacket that is, if not Roddy's, it's a very similar copy to Roddy's. She wears that down to the ring every time she goes to the ring, just about. And I like Rousey a lot. I liked Rousey a lot before she got into the WWE. I liked her as a UFC fighter. I like her now. I've got absolutely no problem with having the belt on her. I think it's probably good for the business and good for the women's revolution that they're trying to, or I guess evolution, that they're trying to push right now. And they're building toward a pay-per-view that's entirely helmed by women. That's a really cool thing to happen, and it's a really cool time to be a wrestling fan as a result. I think Rousey's the right choice to kind of be the flagship for that, and it makes a lot of sense. But I do really like Alexa, and I would love to see her. I hope that the belt not being on her doesn't put her to the back of the line. I'd like to see her get in the spotlight as much as possible. Then your main event, I'm skipping some matches here and there, by the way. This is not the complete card, but your main event was Roman Reigns facing off against Brock Lesnar. They did a really good job of tricking the audience into not just crapping all over the match, because I expected everybody to boo, 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 boo. But they did a very smart thing in that they had Braun Strowman come out just before the match started and say that whoever won he was going to take on next. He kind of put his quarter down on the machine and said, "I got next." That was an arcade gaming reference for you kids who who were never in an arcade. You used to do that. We used to have these places that kids went to play video games, like in food courts and malls and stuff, and they were big cabinet games. And you'd be playing one, and some kid who was a lot better than you would come by, and he'd put his quarter down on the machine and tell you that he got the next game, and you had to honor that. That's what Braun Strowman did. He put his quarter on the machine, and then Lesnar beat him up during the match, F5'd him, and hit him with the Money in the Bank briefcase a few times, and I guess that killed him, because he stayed down. A guy can tip over an ambulance, but he can't take a few shots with a clearly aluminum briefcase. But it resulted in Reigns finally beating Lesnar and taking the belt, and rumor has it that Lesnar's going to be going away for quite some time as he's training for his UFC return. That's fine. It's kind of nice to have the belt back on the show. But they got out of Dodge quick. He won the belt. He got up on the turnbuckle. He was there for about 2 seconds. "We'll see you tomorrow, folks." And they just got out of Dodge quick. Just like, "Let's get out of here before they know what hit him." Crowd didn't have time to boo. Actually, it seemed to me like a lot of the crowd was cheering it. So that was, I'm okay with that. I'm not a huge Reigns fan. I'm also not on the Reigns hate train. But it is nice to have the belt back on the show, regardless of how you feel about him. And like I said, I'm not hugely anti-Reigns. I don't think he's the golden child that Vince thinks he is. But I got no problem with him. So Nice to have the belt on the show. I don't mind that Reigns is the one that has it. I especially don't mind that Reigns is the one that has it after what happened the next night on Raw. So let's just jump right to that. This is the only thing I'm going to talk about that happened on Monday Night Raw this past week. We had Dean Ambrose returned, and he had a match early in the night and debuted a new, slower, stronger style. He looked great. He has taken on a kind of, I almost want to say, an enforcer-like character. Like, there were some shades of Arn Anderson in there. And that's one of the highest compliments I can pay anybody, because I respect Arn Anderson possibly more than anybody else that's in the business. I'm a big Arn Anderson fan. And there were some AA shades in what I saw in Dean Ambrose on Monday. All that to say, Dean had his match and kind of established, okay, still got his friendship with Seth, but Dean really looks like he's going to have a heel turn here. He's grown out his beard, he's changed the hair, he's looking jacked, you know. So I just figured at some point, well, he's going to, you know, swerve Seth Rollins and beat him up and et cetera, et cetera. But that didn't happen. Instead, what happened was we got a match of the year candidate in the main event, where Reigns started the show by coming out and saying he was going to defend the belt, he was going to be a fighting champion, and the first person he was going to fight for the belt tonight is going to be a guy who never got his shot, never got his rematch for the title, who won it here in Brooklyn. And by this point, the audience has put it together, and he announces that his first defense is going to be against Finn Balor. And the place goes nuts. And I went a little nuts too, because I love Finn Balor. And knowing that they're never going to put the belt on him, I still really wanted to see that match. And I was excited to know that it was happening. Fast forward to the end of the night. We get that match. It's a barn burner. It's a fantastic match. If we've all been sitting around, like, one of the things that's bothered me about the Roman Reigns hate train is that people have been chanting, "You can't wrestle," at him. And dude can wrestle. Dude's a really solid hand in the ring. He's not the best. He was unable to carry The Undertaker to a good match when he needed to, because The Undertaker, more than anything else, needs an opponent that can make him look good, and Reigns just doesn't quite have that skill set. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to The Undertaker, but he just needs somebody that knows how to feed him, and Reigns doesn't have that skill set. But he's a very good wrestler when he's paired with someone that his skill set does match, and we got that in his match against Finn on Monday. It was a great match, and it was back and forth, and I went in knowing that they're never going to put the belt on Finn Balor. They're just not going to give it to him, especially not the night after their poster child has won it. But they did a great job throughout the match of making you think that they might, which is one of the best things that you can do as a wrestling booker, is take something that the audience knows isn't going to happen and still make a jaded guy like me think, well, hang on, this is really starting to be something here, and get invested. Ultimately, they didn't put the belt on Finn. Braun came down to the ring again, distracted Finn briefly, not in like a serious way, but Finn just kind of looked back and saw him, missed the coup de grace. Seth won the match, retained the title, etc., etc. Finn got out of Dodge quick. Strowman got into the ring, handed the briefcase to the ref, told him he was cashing in after a good... I mean, good lord, that match must have been 45 minutes. It had to be. That was a long, beautiful storytelling match. And then, you know, Braun said, "I'm going to cash in now," at the end of this really long match. Seems fair. He handed him the thing, and the bell had not rung yet when they were approaching each other, and suddenly the Shield's music hits. And down to the ring, in Shield attire, come Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, and the three of them powerbombed Braun Strowman through the announce desk, and we got a Shield reunion, which I think they planned all along, but Dean Ambrose got injured months ago, because you can go back in the archives and find where I talked about this, and I said, you know, the Shield reunion might be the way to get Roman over. And they did it. They did it this past Monday, because a lot of people didn't want Roman to have the title. Now I really want to see what they do with it. Now they've got a faction that has the world champion in it, they've got the Intercontinental belt in it, and they've got a guy who has shades of Arn Anderson as the enforcer in the group, and I would not be surprised to soon see some tag team gold in there and Dean Ambrose holding one of those belts. They did it. Yeah, and I think it's time that we admit it, wrestling fans. They did it. They got it over. I still don't think that he's the golden boy. I don't think he's the next John Cena. But they have an angle going on now that we all want to see. And if you're saying that you don't, maybe it's just not your cup of tea, but there's a much better chance that you're just an internet mark. Because this is some beautifully crafted writing. SummerSlam into Raw reminded me of why I'm a wrestling fan, and it's a very happy time for me to be a wrestling fan. I'm looking forward to every episode this week. That said, SmackDown was nothing, really. I mean, it was a perfectly good show. They called it a special edition of SmackDown. I have absolutely no idea what was so special about it. It didn't seem like a special edition. There wasn't, like, a big to-do. You had Samoa Joe attack AJ to further their angle. I'm sure they're building toward a cage match at Hell in a Cell. You had heel Becky Lynch cut a promo and have a scuffle with Charlotte Flair. Enjoyed that. I like heel Becky a lot. You had a good match between Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton that ended in a DQ with Orton, I guess, being the victor. But then Hardy drug Orton over to a side area and did a swanton off of a set of road cases through a table, and it's, again, just one of those things I don't want to see him do anymore, but maybe it's a last hurrah situation, whatever. It was a good match. I enjoyed the match. The swanton was actually a really good finish for it, but I kind of hate seeing him do that these days. I guess the big news from SmackDown is in the main event, we saw the New Day defeat the Bludgeon Brothers and get the tag team belts. I don't care much about the New Day anymore. There was a time I was really entertained by them, but I just feel like they passed me by, or I've passed them by, one of the two. I don't even understand the pancake thing, and they're just not my cup of tea. From what I understand, though, Rowan from the Bludgeon Brothers, the bald guy with the big beard, Rowan apparently has a pretty serious injury that he's going to have to get some surgery for, and that explains the changing of the belts. And I guess when you're in that situation, yeah, the New Day makes sense to put it on. But I'm tired of the New Day. I feel like they're played out. I feel like they need to be refreshed. Who knows? Maybe this title run will put a little bit of wind back in their sails. But it was, ultimately, I didn't feel much about it one way or the other. I often forget who is the tag champions on SmackDown. They haven't done a very good job of booking that division on SmackDown. Raw, I know it's the B team, without question. SmackDown, I was going into that match still thinking it was the Usos for some reason. But it's been the Bludgeon Brothers for a while. They're just not doing a very good job of making the tag team belts stand out on SmackDown. So it really doesn't matter to me who has them, because I'm not going to remember anyway, I guess. But yeah, SmackDown just felt like an episode, whereas Raw felt like a spectacular episode. So that's where we are with wrestling. It's an exciting time to be a fan. The fact that I said SmackDown was just an episode, that doesn't mean it was a bad episode. I'm still looking forward to a lot of the angles on SmackDown. I'm really looking forward to watching Joe and AJ fight forever. And I'm looking forward to heel Becky Lynch. I like her a lot. I'm looking forward to a lot on SmackDown. They called it a special edition and it didn't feel special. It was the only thing. And also Raw was so good the night before that SmackDown just was never going to measure up, so whatever, it was fine. It was still wrestling, still enjoyed it. But in general, it's a very exciting time to be a fan. I'm having a lot of fun. If you're a fan, and if you've listened this far, I assume that you are a fan. I hope you're having fun, and let's all just take a moment collectively as fans and just appreciate the time of wrestling that we live in, because it's really good right now, and we should be grateful for that, because we've all lived through a lot of years where it hasn't been so good. So yeah, good product by the WWE over the past week. Looking forward to the next week, it's just a lot of fun to be a wrestling fan, and I hope you're having as much fun with it as I am. So that's that. Let's move on. Let's do a little bit more music, and we'll talk about something else.
Isn't this the part where I see a light in the tunnel? And I think it's a new start.
Well, folks, I'm looking at the time index here on my recording device, and I've gone longer than I meant to. I talked about wrestling for a long time. Talked about fleas for a lot longer than I thought I was going to as well. So I'm actually going to call it a little bit early here. I'm not going to do another segment. I'm going to just kind of drift into the outro here. Plenty of stuff I could talk about. I was thinking I was going to talk about another guitar this week. I've been enjoying talking about my guitars. I was thinking maybe I'd talk about just some of the guitar stuff that I have. I recently got some new capos, some signature guitar picks, some custom-made guitar picks. Maybe I'll put up a picture of those anyway. I like my guitar picks. Bought some strings. I'm working on some stuff. I've reorganized my office a little bit to have some of my favorite guitars just right on hand as I'm sitting here recording this or working on something or whatever. I'm kind of enjoying my music stuff here lately. I was going to talk about all that. Maybe we'll put it off till next week. I'll tell you that my current listening, what I've been listening to lately, been listening to a lot of progressive music, been listening to some Yes, some Rush, some Dream Theater, stuff like that. That's my current listening. I've got a long love affair with prog rock, and those bands are certainly at the center of all of it. So that's what I've been listening to. But otherwise, we'll save the rest for another day and another episode. So there's plenty to talk about. I guess I've got a note in my phone with subjects I might want to talk about, and had a bunch of stuff under this week that I guess I'll just move to next week. So I think I've already got next week's outlined. So maybe it'll be a little bit easier to get done next week for me. I already know what I'm going to talk about. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for putting up with my wrestling gibberish. I hope you love that as much as I do. Wish me luck in the battle against the so far only one flea that I've seen. Hate that thing. Hate it. I'm gonna find it and I'm gonna kill it and I'm gonna display its carcass as a warning to others. That's the only thing I can do. Until then, hopefully next week you'll hear me update that the flea problem is over. I found the one. I killed the one and I didn't see a second one. Hopefully that's the news you'll get next week. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for plenty of guitar stuff probably next week. Maybe we'll talk about some other stuff. Maybe I'll play some guitar for you next week. I haven't done that in a couple of weeks. I don't know. Maybe I'll call a friend at random. You never know what's going to happen on this show, because I don't either. So it just happens as it happens. thanks a lot for hanging in there with me. Thanks a lot for your support. Means a lot to me. I didn't say it at the start of the show, so I'll say it now. There are some websites you can check out if you're interested. If you would like to see the companion blog for the show where I post photos, and there's actually a because I didn't do a show last week, there's actually a blog post up on the blog that is about the stuff that I would have done a show about last week. You can check out the companion blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. We're searchable on iTunes and CastBox and lots of other apps, but we'll never be on Spotify. I'm not willing to do whatever it is that they want me to do to get on there. If you want to know more about me, you can check out DerekBrink.com. There's plenty of stuff there. If you like the music that you hear throughout the show, go on over to DerekBrink.bandcamp.com and download it for absolutely free. Just put zero as your purchase price. I don't even collect your email, and I'll have links to the songs that I put in this episode on the blog as well, in case you just want those songs. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for supporting the show. Means a lot to me. I love doing this, and I hope you love hearing it. And hey, as always, check us out next time. fleas.